This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Welcome to another Sunday interview from Rocketship FM. This is where we bring you the full conversations from our Wednesday episodes. And today we have a fantastic one for you. George Santino didn't have your typical tech story. He didn't go to Stanford. He didn't come from a wealthy family. Instead, he grew up in the ghettos of New York with very little income. And it took him until he was almost 35 till he landed his first job at Microsoft, and at that, an entry-level software tester. But he spent the next 25 years working his way up till he became a partner at Microsoft before leaving. So we have some fantastic advice, an incredibly inspirational journey here from George. Welcome to Rocketship.fm. Explore startups from funding to growth, from culture to sales, and everything in between. I'm Michael Saka.
And I'm Joelle Goldman.
Let's start at the beginning and tell me about kind of the early days, your childhood, and what that was like for you.
Well, I grew up in the projects of South Philadelphia. Family was extremely poor on welfare and surplus food. That was before there was food stamps. We lived in a three-bedroom, one-bath house, seven kids, two parents, very tight quarters, and basically didn't have anything. I would see other kids in the neighborhoods outside of the projects, and they had bikes, and they went to the movies, and they had candy. And I realized that a life like that would take money, and it wasn't money I was going to get from my father, who was a who was disabled and an alcoholic and had other problems. And so as a young kid, I realized I was going to have to start earning some money. So I started off by collecting soda bottles in the trash because you could take those back for 2 cents. And 2 cents brought a lot of penny candies back then. Mm-hmm. And when the pennies weren't enough, I saw a guy come to the neighborhood selling tomatoes off the back of the truck. And at 7 years old, I offered to help him sell tomatoes. And he said if I went door to door and sold tomatoes for 25 cents a bag, he'd give me a nickel a bag. And at the end of the first day, I had 50 cents, which was quite a lot of money. That was enough money for plenty of penny candies and going to the movies. And so I learned very, very quickly at a very young age that life was going to take money. And the way you got money is you got out there and you worked for it.
So what was the specific change that you made as you were growing up that, you know, I guess led the path to getting out of that life?
Well, I learned even at that young age that, frankly, it takes money to make money. When I was selling the tomatoes and I was getting paid, I spent that money as quickly as the guy gave it to me. And I realized that that wasn't going to work out. And so I started taking the money and going to the supermarket and buying boxes of candy bars and ice cream bars and selling them for a profit and making even more money. And so I realized that, you know, it takes money to make money and you have to use your money to try to earn other money. We got out of the projects because, frankly, my father filed for Social Security disability and it took a number of years to finally get approved. And when he did, he got a lump sum of money and that was enough to move us out of the projects to the suburbs of Tampa, Florida, which was frankly a very, very different life, where I met other people, middle-class people who had had a different life. And I started to learn that, you know, how they lived. And it was frankly the way I wanted to live.
Was there an advantage from coming, you know, from the projects of Philadelphia to, you know, a place like the suburbs of Florida that gave you a different mentality when you approached business and making money?
Well, I think there were two things you had. One, you were a hell of a lot tougher because you grew up in a very tough place with that could be very violent at times. And you learned to appreciate things a lot more. When you had to dig through people's trash to find soda bottles to take back to the store to get some penny candies, and now you were hanging out with kids who got an allowance from their parents, they tended to take things for granted, and I didn't. I knew that if you worked for something and you earned it, that it had value to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's a tough lesson to learn in for many of us who grew up kind of privileged, right? And we don't know any different, right? And so it's a tough lesson for many of us to learn that appreciation. But you went to the Army after. And what happened when you went to the Army?
Well, I knew that a good life meant you had to have a good job, and a good job required a good education. I couldn't afford to pay for college. But if you joined the Army would give you the GI Bill and they'd pay for college. And that sounded like a pretty good deal to me. So I decided I would join the Army and they would pay for my college. But in basic training, we were getting yelled at and cursed at by the drill sergeants, which is the way it works in basic training. And we were told to run down the stairs and line up. And apparently the squad didn't do that quite fast enough. So we got yelled and cursed at again and heard some insults about us and our mothers. And we're sent back up the stairs to run down again. And I was determined to be the first one down those stairs and in that line, so I didn't get yelled at anymore. And I started running down the stairs, and for some reason, the drill sergeant closed the door just before I got down those stairs, and I ended up running right through the door, right through the window, severing my right wrist. The drill sergeant quickly ran over, saw the injury, and told me to stand there and put pressure on it as he went and got his car to rush me to the Army hospital. cursing at me the entire time for bleeding in his car, by the way.
Never let up, do they?
Right, never let up, right? You got it. The training must continue. And got to the hospital where I thought they were just going to sew up my wrist and send me back. But I ended up being in that hospital for 2 months. My right hand was severely damaged. I lost the use of my right thumb. And after 2 months, they discharged me from the Army with a 20% service-connected disability. And so my plan didn't work out. I had my, what I call my first setback, that my book goes through all these setbacks in life, all these obstacles you run into. That was kind of my first one, where here I am home, back living with my mom, with a hand that didn't work and a 20% disability. The VA was sending me $53 a month because I was disabled now and no way to go to college. So I had to get a job, and I got a job at the local Burger Chef.
This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
Wow. Yeah. So how long were you there? And then what was your goal in being there? What was the next step you wanted to take?
Well, you know, I got a job. I didn't have, you know, I had my high school diploma. I didn't have any really formal training or experience in anything. And so I got a job basically as a cleanup boy at the Burger Chef making minimum wage, and realized that that wasn't going to get me out of my mother's house and into an apartment or anything like that. So I just tried to be the best worker I could there, and eventually worked my way up to shift supervisor, assistant manager. And in 2 years, I was the general manager of that store, making enough money to get my own car and my own apartment and get out of there. And it was another case where I learned that if I figured out what the company valued, what they rewarded, and did those things, you know, I could move up the chain fairly quickly. And that's what happened at Burger Chef.
So I know you eventually end up at Microsoft, but I'm not seeing the chain here between technology and Burger. How did that work?
Well, that's a long story that turned into a 344 page book. Right? So it takes a while to get there. At this point, I'm 18 years old. I don't get to Microsoft until I'm 35.
Oh wow! Okay,
but you know, I can give you the kind of the Reader's Digest version.
as we
connect those dots, if you'd like.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I want to get to Microsoft, but I need to know how did that work for you?
Well, basically, you know, I got into fast food because getting into fast food was fairly easy. It's a very hard job. You work a lot of hours. You have to be willing to put in a lot of effort. And so I was able to get that job and move up the ladder. And I went from Burger Chef, then to Arby's, and then to Wendy's. And when I was working at Wendy's, I had a car accident that put me in the hospital for about a month, where they thought I was never going to walk again. But after about a month, I was able to get up and walk and do the things I needed to do, except be able to work at a fast food restaurant where you're on your feet all day. Mm. So I got a job selling life insurance. And after I sold life insurance for a while, I sold real estate for a while. And then I opened up a sports bar with a friend who used to work at Wendy's. Around this time, computers were just starting to come out. You know, when I was in high school, the first calculators came out. Computers were just starting to come out. And I had a friend who was very, very curious about things like that. And when the first kits started coming out, he would buy them and we would learn about computers and we would learn about software. And when I owned a sports bar, I started to try to use software to manage the business. And so I started to teach my stuff about computers and software. Excuse me. When we ended up selling the sports bar, I got a job as a liquor salesman, and I ended up rupturing a disc in my back delivering some beer to one of my clients. Ended up having to have a back operation. 2 years, over the next 2 years, I had three back operations, with the last one being a four-level fusion. And I was told I was 100% disabled. I would never work again, that I should apply for Social Security disability. And I said, no, I'm not my father. I'm not going to go back to living in the projects and doing that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that a job in software, a job in tech, is a job where you wouldn't have to be on your feet all day. You kind of get paid to think for a living. And I had taught myself about software and computing and decided that we would move to San Jose, California, Silicon Valley, and try to get a job in the software industry. Of course, they wouldn't hire me. I didn't have a college degree. I didn't have any formal training, no experience. And when I applied to Microsoft, they turned me down immediately, saying, we don't really need any fast food restaurant managers. And I called them back, and they turned me down four times before I finally was able to land an entry-level job at Microsoft.
And so what was that entry-level job doing?
It was working in their test lab, basically maintaining the hardware and keeping the lab clean for their testers and their developers. And so many, many years ago, at the age of 18, I got a job as a cleanup boy at Burger Chef and worked myself up to manager. Here I am at the age of 35, getting a job basically as a cleanup boy at Microsoft and endeavoring to work my way up to management again.
Yeah, I mean, it's... sometimes we just keep starting again, right? I mean, we keep reinventing ourselves. So what did you learn at your tenure at Microsoft? You were there for almost two decades.
Yeah, well, first thing I learned, and I learned this long before Microsoft, where it doesn't matter where you start, you just have to start. You know, a lot of people don't want to start at the very bottom. You know, they go to college, they come out with a bachelor's degree or master's degree and say, you know, I should be the manager of this place. And you say, look, just get in the door, just start. Once you start, you have to learn what the company values, what they're going to reward, what it's going to take to move up and compete, because other people want to move up too. And not everybody's going to move up the chain. And so what I learned at Microsoft fairly quickly was that it was a company that valued results above all else. They weren't a very political place. It was all about work hard, get results, move ahead, and they rewarded that. Mm. And so when I was working in the lab, I said, I got to get out of the lab. I got to become a software tester, because that was kind of the next step on the ladder. And so I put in extra hours at night and extra hours on the weekend, and I tested their software products and I entered bugs into their database. And when it got to the point to where they needed to hire another software tester, they came to me and asked me if I wanted the job, because I was already doing the job. And so I learned that at Microsoft, if you wanted that next opportunity, it wasn't a place where you can say, give me that opportunity and I'll show you what I could do. It was a place where you had to start demonstrating those abilities, and then they kind of formalized it after the fact. So you want to be a software tester? Start testing software. After that, I wanted to be a lead. If you want to be a lead, start being a leader. And when they need a lead, they'll see that you already are doing these sorts of things. And each step along the way, I looked at what the next job was, what the requirements were, and I started doing those in advance of getting the opportunity.
And you, I assume, continued that for your career until you became a partner at Microsoft.
Right. Yep.
Tell me a bit about what it was like, you know, at that executive level at a company like Microsoft. What things can we take away when we're building companies now from the ground up?
Well, I think the important thing once you get into management is you have to surround yourself with very, very good people. And you have to realize that it is these people that are going to help to make you a success and make your company a success. So hire smart people, people who know stuff you don't know, because you're already there. You don't need another you. Hire people who are going to be willing to talk back, people who are going to be willing to say when they think you're doing the right thing and when you're not doing the right thing. I used to say I'd rather hear from my employees that I'm doing something stupid than to hear it from my boss. So give your employees that permission to say, we're in this together. And if employees understand what the goals and objectives are and what you're trying to accomplish and why you're trying to accomplish it, I think you get far more out of them than you will if you're just a dictator saying, do X, Y, and Z because I'm the boss. Mm. I mean, there are times they may not agree, and you will say, well, that's tough, I'm the boss. But, you know, it's good to at least have that dialogue to build a team that's going to be motivated and highly effective. Once you have that team, give them feedback. Microsoft had a process once a year where they would do their annual reviews, where they would tell people how they were doing, and they would give them rewards based on their performance, whether or not they were meeting or exceeding their goals and objectives. Well, review time is hardly the time to get feedback. It's too late. They're already decided what the rewards are. You need to get that feedback along the way so you can adjust your course towards exceptional performance. And so I think it's really, really important to sit down with your employees at least, you know, every week. If you can't do that, you know, once a month, to talk about how they're doing towards their goals and how they can adjust so that when it comes review time, there are no surprises, positive or negative. If they don't get a bonus, they'll understand I didn't get a bonus because I didn't do any bonus work. Right. But if they did the bonus work, they better get the bonus. And so you have to have those conversations along the way if you really want to build a great team.
And how do you often present that type of, I mean, those aren't easy conversations to always have. Is there a method that you use to present those, you know, say, negative aspects without derailing someone's motivation?
Well, I think it has to be constructive. I think you have to be able to say, this is what we set out to do. And hopefully you're on the same page as to what you set out to do. This is what obstacles we came across along the way, and this is how we adjusted. And you can talk to an employee about how you went down the wrong path and what adjustments they need to make in a positive way. Because ultimately you're saying, if you make these adjustments, these are going to be the positive rewards that come from it. So it's not like you screwed up and if you screwed up again, you're fired. It's no, you made some mistakes. This is how you adjust. And this is how you'll benefit from making those adjustments. So it's got to be a positive thing, you know, and people will accept that feedback in a positive way. But if you're negative, if it's back to being the drill sergeant screaming at you for bleeding in his car, I don't know that you're going to get a positive result out of that.
Right. So, I mean, you spent 20 years at Microsoft, entered the tech sector at 35. Mm-hmm. Today, we don't see that type of longevity. Do you think it's still possible to spend 20 years at a company?
Yes, I do. I think that there are in the old days, and Microsoft wasn't a part of this, but in the old days where people go to work for a company and you'd get a pension and you'd start to vest in that pension, you couldn't afford to leave because you'd give up your pension. Well, those kind of gone away, and now it's on you to plan and save for your retirement. And companies like Microsoft will have 401ks where they'll put in matching money, but you'll vest out pretty quick, and so you're not tied to the company like you used to be. And so people move around. They say there's a better opportunity if I leave Microsoft and go to Amazon or go to Google or go to Facebook or these other companies. So you do see a lot more of that kind of churn that you didn't see before. And so that's not necessarily a negative thing. But if you say I have a desire to stay with a company, then you have to look for opportunities to continue to grow and to continue to be challenged and to continue to see how this can be a beneficial career. And for me, there was no better place to work than Microsoft, because Microsoft allowed me to continue to grow and do many things. And since Microsoft's involved in so many other things, whether it's software or hardware or games or applications, you can really have many careers and still stay at Microsoft. I mean, I worked in PowerPoint and Word and Windows and Office and online services. In my 20-year career, I probably had 7 different careers within that same company.
Do you think that companies smaller than Microsoft, I mean, Microsoft is a behemoth at this point, do you think companies that are smaller than Microsoft can create that same type experience for employees?
I think they have to. I think if you are a small company and you're attempting to grow, you're attempting to become that big company. When I started at Microsoft, Microsoft had, you know, something like 10,000 employees. Now they have over 100,000. So, you know, they got there along the way. And a lot of small companies want to get there as well. And so what you have to do is you have to, as I was saying earlier, surround yourself with the right people. And take care of those people, reward those people, you know, share the wealth, so to speak, as you continue to grow your company. But if you do that, you're going to develop a set of very, very loyal employees who are not just going to be loyal to their boss, but they're going to be loyal to the company because they see that symbiotic relationship. They see that, yeah, the company is growing and the people above me are getting rich, but I can too, as long as I'm working hard and getting the results.
Yeah. So you believe in a hand up rather than a hand out.
Yes.
Expand on that for me.
Well, I think that there are situations in life where we are going to get knocked down. Sometimes it's going to be our fault. Sometimes it's not going to be our fault. So you have to have a government, in my opinion, that provides a safety net to its people. There's nothing wrong with things like unemployment insurance. There's nothing wrong with food stamps and welfare, because people will need that kind of stuff from time to time. I start to have a problem when it becomes this long-term dependency, when it's a question of, I'm just going to continue to hand you the money rather than an opportunity to get out of that. I'm a big fan of training programs of, you know, if an industry has got it and decimated for whatever reason, and now a person's skills don't apply to the current business environment, how can we acquire new skills? And having the unemployment office have training programs that help people acquire these new skills is a great idea. To me, that's that hand up. What can I do to help get you out of that situation? Whereas instead, if you just continue to say, well, we're just going to continue to give you that money, you end up with this dependency. You end up with, you know, when you have that, you have a life of survival, not a life of success. And it's the old cliche of teach the man to fish as opposed to giving him the fish. And that it's a cliche for a reason, because it's true.
Yeah. To you, is that a government problem or an entrepreneurial problem that could be solved?
I think it's a combination of both. I think businesses have to provide an opportunity for employees to get ahead. But I think the government has to be careful where, and this will sound strange, but you can start to be too compassionate. You can get to the point where you say, we have to help our people. And yes, you do, but are you really helping them by extending Social Security, not Social Security benefits, but unemployment benefits again and again and again and again? I honestly had a friend who got laid off at one point at Microsoft, got his unemployment, and I said, when are you going to start looking for a job? And he said, when my unemployment runs out. And then they extended the unemployment. And I said, are you going to look for a job now? Well, no, they extended my unemployment. And it got extended three times. And finally, when they stopped extending it, he started looking for a job and he found a job pretty quickly. Well, I'm not saying everybody's like that, mm-hmm. but you can set up a situation where you say, you've taken away my incentive. You've taken away my motivation. And that's where you have to find that fine line. And I know it's difficult. Politicians have been trying it for years and not getting it right. But that's what you have to try to do, where there's help, but there's not dependency. There's a hand up, but there's not this, you know, perpetual hand out. And right. that's a hard problem to solve.
Yeah, it sounds like caring for a bonsai tree, where by giving it restrictions, it is actually showing it love and doing what's good for it. But well, thank you so much for coming on here. I really appreciate, you know, you sharing this with us. You're such an inspirational story. Where can we keep up with you and what you're working on today?
Well, you can search for me as George A. Santino. My website is georgeasantino.com. My Twitter is at George A. Santino. My YouTube is George A. Santino. Everything's George A. Santino. And I just wanted to be Santino, but there's a rapper named Santino. And then I was going to be
everything first.
Right. I was going to be George Santino, but apparently there's a perfume company in France that has georgesantino.com. So I had to put the A in there to differentiate myself. So it's George A. Santino. And my book, Get Back Up, From the Streets to Microsoft Suites, which I hope is motivational and inspirational, and I hope leads to some speaking engagements for me, because that's what I really want to do out is get out there and speak to the YMCA and the Boys and Girls Clubs and that kind of stuff. And you can find that book on Amazon or almost any bookstore has it or can order it these days.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much.
No, it was great talking to you. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with George. Stick around. This Wednesday, we are launching the first episode of our product series, and I can guarantee you it's going to be beneficial. We have interviews with product managers from eBay, from Microsoft, from TaskRabbit, and then even founders like Laura Roder about how she helps guide the company's product through the vision, and how that vision can be essential for enabling a good project manager to do their job. Stick around, hit subscribe if you don't want to miss that. We're going to be spending the next 5 weeks all on product. If you want to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at RocketShipFM. You can follow me at Michael Saka and Joel at Joel Goldman. All right, we'll see you back here on Wednesday for the very first episode in our upcoming product series. I'm excited. And I hope to see you right back here with us.